again, everyone. I'm Brian DeNobelis. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Another college basketball regular season is in the books. Championship week has arrived, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, congrats to St. John's. It was indeed a regular season for the record books in year two under Rick Pitino, 27-4 overall. Who could have predicted that? 18 Big East wins. Not this guy, that's for sure. I thought 16, maybe 17 wins at the most would win the Big East. No way did I think someone would duplicate what UConn did last year, going 18-2. And here we are. St. John's throws all their chips on the table. Everybody played in that final game against Marquette. I'll get to that a little bit later. To me, it was the game of the year in the Big East. Zubi Ejiofor wins it at the buzzer again, and St. John's ties the league record set by last year's UConn team with 18 Big East wins. How about the Johnnies? How about Quinnipiac in the MAC? Regular season champs for the second straight year under Tom Pokora. 15 wins last year in league play, another 15 wins this year. They cut down the nets. They are the team to beat in Atlantic City when the MAC tournament gets underway this week on Wednesday. But as we've seen time and time again, you don't want to be the number one seed in this tournament because you are cursed. The man who knows more about the MAC tournament, the man who has forgotten more about the MAC tournament that I will ever know, my friend and yours, Jaden Daly from Daily Dose of Hoops Blogspot, will join me in just a few minutes. This is always one of the most unpredictable conference tournaments in the country, and Jaden will be in here to make sense of it all and offer his predictions on the wild, wild MAC. Also, I'll preview the NFC. Am I talking football? Oh my God. I will preview the NEC championship game. Central Connecticut, hard-hitting New Britain is there against St. Francis of PA. We've got Ivy Madness 2. How about Princeton getting a win over Penn in their final regular season game? They lock up the fourth and final spot in the Ivy League tournament. We'll talk a little bit about that. Yale is the team to beat there. We'll talk a little Rutgers, the Scarlet Knights. What are their chances in the Big Ten tournament? At least they ended the year, the regular season, on a high, beating Minnesota in overtime. Lots of cover this week. Championship week is here. And of course, the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast is brought to you by Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth or Ocean Counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577. Hey, spring is here. It's a good time of the year to start thinking about the shore, thinking about those homes in Monmouth and Ocean County. Give Mike a call. Tell him that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. All right, let's bring him in. My friend and yours from a Daily Dose of Hoops, blogspot.com. The man who puts more mileage on his tires than a Greyhound bus, Jaden Daly. Jaden, what is up, my friend?
Brian, it's funny you say that. Greyhound could have given me an NIL deal with all the times I've used them over the last decade and a half. Thank you so much for having me on.
No doubt, man. Listen, you get around, Jaden. I mean that in all, you know, awe of what you do. You cover a lot more of the Tri-State area than anyone I know. So here we are, MAC tournament. The team that finished first was the team that was predicted first. How about Quinnipiac and how they did it and where they are, the number one team going into this tournament in Atlantic City this week?
Well, Quinnipiac got hot at the right time, Brian, and took advantage of some of the teams competing with them, struggling down the stretch, obviously. Marist was right up there. Marist beat the Bobcats in the one meeting that they had with one another, but Marist dropped four in a row to end the regular season and dropped down to third. Merrimack struggled a little bit down the stretch, playing teams a second time. Maybe they figured out Joey Gallo and the 2-3 zone a little more. Quinnipiac was consistent with Amari Monroe and Paul Otieno almost an automatic double-double
Yeah.
between one of them every night. Sometimes the both of them are picking one up in a game. And Tom Pecora is doing what he does best with veteran teams. We've seen it over the years, how he did it at Hofstra and how he tried to do it at Fordham in a very deep A-10, much deeper than it is now. He's carving out a niche with Quinnipiac, and you see his influence and the experience that this team has, having retained so much from last year. I think that was the biggest key down the stretch this season. A group that has been there, has done it, knows what it takes, and was able to use that to win a second straight match, the regular season title.
Yeah, Mari Munroe preseason player of the year, and one of the best. He and Otieno, number one and number two in rebounding, like you said, they are Misters double double. But hey, in a tournament like this, where I'm not a big fan of it, I don't like this neutral side. I know the MAC's been doing it for a long time. It's as wide open as it has ever been. And look, I'm not going to count out Marist just because they lost four in a row and Merrimack. Defense travels, and you're talking about, two of the top three, I think, defensive teams in the league, right? With Merrimack and Marist. So if you can defend, you can win.
Absolutely. And you see the defensive efficiency. You talked about Merrimack with the zone and Marist with John Dunn playing his style, a slow style, but one that's going to make it hard on you to score. And also, by the same token, Manhattan, too. Manhattan's got the best offense in the conference, but let's not lose sight of what John Gallagher's teams do defensively as well. Doesn't get enough credit for mixing it up and playing man and zone equally. They've won 7 of 9 to end the regular season and go into the MAC tournament as arguably one of the hottest teams in the conference. All this while only playing seven guys. So you're looking for a wild card. I like the Jaspers a lot in this bracket, and we'll talk about that more as this goes on. Their defense is picked up. They're able to string stops together and get the offense going.
Jaden, that was like, question nine on my list, I think it was. You just said it. Manhattan, you don't want to play them. So I'm guessing they're your dark horse, but unfortunately, they're going up against Iona. It's one of those cliches. It's unfortunate that in that 4-5 matchup, quarterfinals on Thursday, one of these teams is going to be going home.
Yeah, and the last time Manhattan and Iona played each other in the quarters was also in the 4-5 game. That was back in 2018 when Iona ended up winning its third of four in a row. That was the year that the brackets opened up for Iona before they even tipped off, with the 1, 2, and 3 seeds all getting knocked out before Iona's game tipped off against Manhattan. But that was 7 years ago. Iona is a mixed bag. The defense is something that has taken root a little bit. The offense has struggled, but Tobin Anderson's group has been able to string it together. DeJure Reeves already announced that he'll be back next year. He
Yeah.
recorded a video before the senior day ceremonies yesterday to announce that. So that's going to provide some much needed continuity. Iona has not had that in the last 2 years. This group's getting hot at the right time. We know Tobin can make some magic happen in March. And if Iona can get past Manhattan, I think even the other way around, if Manhattan can get past Iona, the winner of that game has a very good chance to beat Quinnipiac in the semifinals on Friday.
That was where I was headed because Quinnipiac's going to be playing the winner of Ryder and Siena. Siena did hand Quinnipiac one of its losses this year. I get that. It's going to be tough for an 8 to beat a 1. Has it happened? Of course it has happened. It's happened recently. But if there's a team out there that is a threat, like you said, to Merrimack getting to that championship game, you think Manhattan has a better chance of beating Iona than, or you think Manhattan has a better chance of beating Quinnipiac than Iona does?
I do. I think Quinnipiac is a better matchup for Iona just because of Munroe and Otieno inside, whereas Iona's guards can match up well with Quinnipiac, with Savion Lewis. Reeves and Adam Engi can neutralize him, but the front court for the Bobcats would be the advantage. Manhattan has a much stronger and much more physical front line with Will Sidnor and Wes Robinson. And don't sell Swish Gilliard short. This playing the three at maybe 6'3", 6'4", he can get in there and rebound. He reminds me a lot of George Beamon, who did the same thing for Steve Masiello's teams 10 years ago.
Okay. I'm gonna go back to your preseason predictions. Had you on earlier this year, and we were previewing the MAC, you and I, and I asked you for a team that would overachieve, meaning finish a lot higher than they were predicted by the coaches, and a team that would underachieve. You nailed it. You said Fairfield would underachieve. They were predicted fourth. You were concerned about who they had there. There were a lot of unknowns. They barely squeaked in at the end of the year. No thanks in part to their rival from Quinnipiac. As Tom Pokora rested his starters, Fairfield took advantage, beat Quinnipiac, and snuck in as the eighth seed.
Yeah, and that game was close late in the second half, too. Fairfield used a 12-0 run with about 4 minutes to go to separate that game. It was tied at 67 right before the last time out. So it's not like Quinnipiac laid down. And I've seen some fans that suggested that maybe Tom Pecora sat his players to get Fairfield in. That's not true.
Oh, come on.
I think he rested his guys because he said they were banged up, number one, and then number two, with not much to play for last game of the year, you want to give your guys a chance to get back to full strength going into the tournament. You already know you're the one seed. I didn't find a problem with what he did. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Listen, a lot of guys banged up this time of year. If you can get them a little bye week, I think every coach would sign up for that. Now, Rick Pitino, on the other hand, did not do that. That's for another interview. But I applauded Pitino for what he did against Marquette, and I have no problem with what Pecora did, because if I was in that situation, the game didn't matter. I might have done the same thing. So the Stags, their reward, getting in as the 10th and final team, they get Sacred Heart, who you can make a case had the best season of any team in the MAC, the most surprising team. They were predicted 13th, ended up finishing 7th, could have finished as high as I think 5th. So how about that game? Anthony Latina, first year in the MAC, taking on Fairfield, a team that before this year, Sacred Heart had never beaten in 10 tries. Lo and behold, they won the two. Can the Pios sweep them in all three games this year?
It's very hard to do, but I think they can do it. I think Sacred Heart's offense is a little too much for Fairfield on paper. I know sometimes with the offense it creates an up and down track meet kind of game, and the defense struggles to keep up. But I got to see Sacred Heart up close both games this past weekend against Manhattan and against Iona. And I like what this team has become with Mekhi Connor, the freshman point guard, who I don't know if he will get rookie of the year, but he's definitely going to be on the all rookie team. He sees the floor better than a lot of upperclassmen at that level as well. You have Tanner Thomas, who can pretty much knock down any shot from any range. Bryce Johnson up front as well. Sacred Heart has pieces, and Anquan Hill is working his way back from a back injury as well. The job that Anthony Latina has done this season, in light of the personal circumstances that he's faced, having lost both his parents 3 months apart at the beginning of the season and at the end of the off season, coaching through that and using his team as a means of support to pull him through, bringing this group into a postseason, that deserves some kind of recognition, even if he doesn't get an award for it.
Totally agree. I think that, listen, the competitor Anthony, knowing him the way I do, of course you don't want to lose your last two games going into the tournament, but losing at Manhattan and at Iona in a game that, they were a 3-point shot away from winning it, there's no shame in losing it at both of those teams.
No, not at all. Not with the way Manhattan has played as of late, and the Iona game was back and forth the whole way. It's one of those great game, it's a shame one team has to lose deals.
Yeah, 90-88, I think was the final score. Yeah, and was it Ngai that hit a crazy jumper to put Iona ahead?
Yeah, it was Ngai with a floater from just inside the right block with 9 seconds left.
Okay. Yeah. So All right, let's break down the matchups now, Jaden. Okay, let's begin with that 7-10. Who do you like, Sacred Heart or Fairfield? I think you said Sacred Heart.
Yeah, I like Sacred Heart. I think they win comfortably. I could see a 9 or 10 point win.
Okay, 8-9 matchup. Ryder against Siena. Ryder has won three straight to end the regular season. They had to win those three to qualify to get in. Here's a stat for you. I'm sure you know. They have never beaten Siena in the MAC tournament. 0-4.
Didn't know that. I know Marist is 0-6 against Siena Lifetime. I didn't know that about Ryder. My concern with the Bronx is this: every time they get to the MAC tournament, they always have found a way to let you down. And I'm hoping Kevin Badgett's a great guy. He's first class. He deserves better. I'm hoping they can put on a show. But I like what Jerry McNamara's done with the Siena team. I got to witness some of it firsthand on Saturday against Manhattan. I think the combination of Justice Schoetz and Major Freeman in the backcourt might be a little too much. And then Brendan Coyle on the wing, if he can draw fouls as he's done probably better than any 3 or 4 man in the conference this year, I like the Saints in this matchup. It'll be close, but I think Siena pulls away at the end.
Yeah, Jerry McNamara, the former Syracuse great, one of the greatest games of all time, in the Big East tournament. I believe he was part of that six overtime game.
No, he was gone well before that.
Oh, he was gone. Okay. Well,
He was a freshman when Carmelo was a freshman.
way back. Well, the years kind of, when you get to be my age, Jaden, the years kind of blend together, but an all-time great at Syracuse nonetheless. And Siena, hey, the Saints, the MAC is better when Siena is winning, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay. So now the Sacred Heart going up against Merrimack, the number two seed. Very good games, both of these during the regular season. Merrimack won by one at their place. I think Sacred Heart won by one in Fairfield. Could the Pios pull another upset off?
They can. The thing that worries me, though, is they're going to have less than a 24-hour turnaround before they have to play Merrimack with that zone. And I think the legs and the stamina off a game against Fairfield is going to come into play. It's going to come down to how fast they can take control of the Fairfield game and then worry about what they're going to face on Wednesday in the quarterfinals. Too many variables, though. I have to take Merrimack. It wouldn't surprise me if Sacred Heart won, but I do think Merrimack wins it there.
Merrimack also has the leading scorer in the conference in Bud Clark. What do you think of him?
I think he could very well be the player of the year. I think it's either him or Amari Monroe at Quinnipiac. Clark is just an X factor in so many ways. He does a little bit of everything on offense and defense. When you have a player like him, you can go a long way.
31 games they've played this year. He has scored in double figures in all but one. So 30 games out of 31 in double figures for Bud Clark. Hey, when you have the best player on the court, you always stand a chance to win. The one game that we did not talk about in the other side of the bracket, 3 versus 6, Marist and Mount St. Mary's.
I like Mount St. Mary's in this game.
Ooh.
I'm concerned with Marist. I feel like that team may have peaked a little too soon. There's just something that hasn't been there the last couple of weeks for John Dunn. Whether it's Josh Pastorelli not shooting as well, maybe the absence of Jackson Price has affected this group more than usual. I'm concerned with the Red Foxes. I think they hit their best stride. And it's in the rearview mirror now. I'm concerned about the ability to get up for one more. Whereas the Mount already beat Marist on Saturday. That matchup's going to be fresh in everyone's mind. I could see them doing it again for the second time in less than a week.
Wow. So have you filled that? That would be an upset, no doubt. And it was only a couple of weeks ago, like you said, that Marist had control of their own destiny. So a wise former Seton Hall coach, now Harvard coach, Tommy Amaker, once said, it doesn't matter how well you're playing when you enter the tournament. It matters how well you play once you get there. Can Marist find the switch? Can a team like that suddenly turn it on and win three straight?
Yes, and you look back, it reminds me of Iona in 2013, where they had a stretch in February where they had six or seven losses, all one or two possession games, and then Tim Klose was able to get it together at the right time and win the MAC tournament in 2013. That was the first time he won it against Manhattan in the first of three straight finals against the Jaspers. Marist could do that. It's just a matter of how effective the defense is against an unorthodox man offense.
Okay. All right. So, Jaden, let's get your predictions here. I don't, did you fill out a bracket at all?
I have not yet, but I have a very good idea of where I want to go.
Okay. Then tell our listeners where you think this MAC tournament is going to go.
I'm going to go with Manhattan and Merrimack in the final. I'm going to go with one of the hotter teams in the league against arguably, if not the most consistent behind Quinnipiac, the second most consistent. I think Joey Gallo is due. He's done so much already in the NEC. Twice he got to the title game, won it the first time, but couldn't take advantage of it because they were still transitioning from Division Two. And then last year at home, losing to Wagner, I think that loss with what's come back has been in the consciousness of his players.
Okay.
Manhattan's depth on short notice does worry me a little bit. Three games in a row, playing six or seven guys. I'm going to go with Merrimack. It's probably going to be like a 57-53 kind of game on Championship Saturday later this week, but I'm going to go with Merrimack over Manhattan. It should be a thrilling game one way or the other.
How about that? Well, listen. We know in this league, you've said it, you know, it's hard to win as the one seed. Do you have the stats of, you know, when, how many times in the last 10 years or so the one seed has won?
It's only happened twice since 2010.
There you go. I knew
Iona,
you'd have the answer. So in the
Iona in
last,
2019 and Iona again 2 years ago at Patino.
okay, say that again. Since 2010.
Only twice, both times Iona. Once in 2019 and then again in 2023.
Has the one seed won? Yeah,
Yeah.
it's to me, it's got to be the most unpredictable, upside down, topsy turvy conference tournament in the country. You know, from the SWAC to the ACC to the SEC. If Merrimack wins, all right, let's put it this way: if any team other than Iona wins, because St. Peter's didn't make it, we will have it'll be the first time since Manhattan won back to backs. In 2014 and 2015, that someone other than Iona or St. Peter's has won it. Iona has dominated it, but before then, you know, there were a lot of teams that have done it. I like, for some reason, I think that this may be the year that Tom Pokora finally does it. It's the curse of the number one seed. I get it. It wouldn't surprise me if Merrimack won it. It wouldn't surprise me, quite honestly, if any of the top five or six teams won it, Jaden.
Me either. And you know what? Quinnipiac would be a fun story from getting so close last year and losing at the buzzer in the semifinals to St. Peter's. You have the Pecora angle. That would be a fun story for me to write because I remember the days where I was one of the only people who would cover him at Fordham. So that would be fun to watch. He's waited a long time to get there on his own. So we'll see what happens. And anything can happen in that tournament, Brian. We've both been around that block long enough to know.
Yeah, no doubt. And listen, your pick is as good as mine. You know, Merrimack, with the coaching pedigree, like you said, I just think that a team like Quinnipiac, they've had the most veterans all year long, and a chip on their shoulder, most experienced. They've been there, fallen short. Maybe this is finally their year to cut down the nets. And if so, it would be their first time ever winning the MAC championship and going to the NCAA tournament as a Division One program. There's so many storylines in the MAC. That's why I love this conference, Jaden. There are so many storylines. John Dunn could get there for the first time. Sacred Heart's a first-time team there. Can Tobin bring Iona back? The most decorated program in MAC tournament history. It's a fun conference to cover, man.
It always is. It always has been.
Yeah, good stuff. So, listen, I hope you're at that championship game on Saturday. I know you're going to do a lot of double duty this week. You'll be at the Big East tournament, from what I understand, and possibly down in AC. Either way, get your easy pass out. And, it's a good thing you don't have to throw those quarters in the tokens anymore.
Yeah, I'll have a couple other people in AC to cover me while I'm at MSG. So it's not like we won't be fully staffed. It's just a matter of when I'll be down there personally.
Right. Well, listen, nobody covers this area better than you, Jaden. I'm a big fan. DailyDoseOfHoops.blogspot.com. Give him a follow as well on Twitter, Jaden Daly. Can't thank you enough. I hope to see you at a game very soon, Jaden. And I appreciate you taking time once again.
My pleasure, Brian. Anytime, you know that.
Yeah, love that guy. Jaden does such a fantastic job traversing the tri-state from Storrs, Connecticut to Jamaica, Queens to Piscataway, New Jersey, even down to Trenton, Princeton area, everywhere in between. Dude checks all the boxes, man. He knows the MAC inside and out. And I just want to conclude the MAC on this. All of their big awards came out on Monday. Tom Pokora, back-to-back MAC Coach of the Year. Amari Monroe, as expected, did win the Player of the Year from Quinnipiac. He was the preseason Player of the Year in the MAC, and he wins it. Had an amazing year, Monroe did. Led the league in double doubles. I believe in league play, he averaged 20 points, just under 20 points, and 10 and a half rebounds a game. To me, he was the clear-cut choice. But there are so many good players in the MAC. You even look at the first team selection, and there were guys everywhere. DeJure Reeves from Iona and Josh Pasquarelli from Marist, Bud Clark, we mentioned him in the interview, stud at Merrimack, Monroe, and Paul Otieno, his teammate at Quinnipiac. Otieno is the only one of those who's gone, doesn't have any more eligibility. Monroe is going to command NIL money. Bud Clark, absolutely, just a sophomore, going to command NIL money. Pasquarelli, NIL money at Marist. And Reeves is the only one among them who has recommitted to playing at Iona. So good for Tobin Anderson. Great for Tobin. Great for the Gaels. It's great to see DeJure Reeves, first team All-MAC, coming back next year. And guys like Will Sidnor, the MAC Freshman of the Year from Manhattan, and another dynamite freshman from Sacred Heart, Makai Connor, who I absolutely love from Fairfield County. These Adam Njie from Iona, will these players, these stud freshmen, be coming back? And Jaden Zimmerman from Quinnipiac, will they come back as sophomores to their programs? We're gonna wait and see. We're gonna wait and see because in a league where, from what I'm hearing, not everybody in the MAC gets NIL money, and has NIL money. There are 13 schools in the MAC, and I know from what I'm hearing, there are a good four schools that have zero or close to nothing with NIL money. And from what I understand, Niagara, Canisius, St. Peter's is another team that has little to no NIL money. And it's no secret, those teams are at the bottom. Those three teams are at the bottom of the MAC. And I don't want to turn this into, a whole NIL discussion, but there is another team in Sacred Heart that this year that had no NIL money and somehow managed to overachieve and finish seventh in the conference. So, kudos to Anthony Latina And the job he did at Sacred Heart this year, they were predicted 13th. They will be the seventh seed, and they are very much a threat to win a couple of games, if not more, in this wide open MAC tournament. But you know, it's hard. It's hard. You know, Iona, from what I've heard, has one of the richest NIL vaults. Certainly Quinnipiac, Marist, Merrimack. You know, these teams, those are the top four teams in the MAC. And I don't know the order of wealthiest to poorest, but I guarantee you this, they all have NIL initiatives, those teams at the top. And for a team like Sacred Heart to do what they did this year, now the question is, you know, can they keep some of these players? Right? Will they be able to retain Mekhi Connor? Will they be able to retain a player like Tanner Thomas, Anquan Hill? It's going to be hard without NIL money. So we'll see where they go from here. But, you know, a team like St. Peter's and Bashir Mason, you know, how will they move forward in the MAC? What will their NIL initiative be? Otherwise, it's going to be hard. I don't care how good of a coach you are. Look at Shaheen Holloway. You need the revenue to be able to retain some guys and develop them. And even then, these MAC coaches know their best players are likely out the door. So, you know, again, we'll see where this goes, but something to think about in the MAC, where some of the teams, you know, just like the rest of the country, it's the haves and the have-nots. And more often than not, NIL translates into performance on the court and performance in the standings. So just wanted to get that out there. Okay, let's go to the NEC. All right, want to spend about 5 minutes on these topics here. I want to talk NEC, I want to talk St. John's, UConn, I want to get to the Ivy League. So we'll go quickly around the tri-state here. We'll do a little tri-state wraparound, about 5 minutes each. And we'll start with the NEC Championship. It's set for Tuesday. Central Connecticut back in the finals for the first time since 2007. That is a hot ticket in hard-hitting New Britain. Dietrich Arena there, whatever they call it, Dietrich Stadium. Is it Dietrich? I know Bill Dietrich was the coach there. So let's just call it Dietrich Hall, shall we? They face off against St. Francis. They are the surprise team. I really thought LIU would get there, but St. Francis, the Red Flash, they came from behind and outscored LIU down the stretch 7-0 and took LIU by storm. So it's the Red Flash of St. Francis against Central Connecticut. And the Blue Devils have all the advantage in this one. They're at home. They are number one in offensive and defensive efficiency in the NEC. Last year, they were the best team and got upended by Donald Copeland and Wagner. Caught him by surprise and, you know, had the greatest run in MAC postseason history, winning all three games on the road. Did Donald Copeland. You're not catching Central by surprise. As a matter of fact, FDU had a chance. And I didn't think they did, but credit to Jack Castleberry and FDU. They were down 21 points to Central on the road in the semifinals and in the second half, 21 points. And they forced overtime, but that's where Central held on. Devin Hay, Jordan Jones, top two, one of the, you know, two of the top five players in the NEC did it. When you get to this stage, okay, sure you need role players, but you need your stars to be superstars. You need your stars to be superstars. They need to perform better, equal or better than their regular season stats. And that's exactly what Devin Hay did. 29 points. I think it's a career high. 29 points. There wasn't a shot that he didn't like that he wasn't taking and making in this game. He was brilliant. Jordan Jones had 17, but six of those came in overtime. Most of them, I think all of them at the free throw line. So Central Connecticut was tested. That was their one test, I believe, in this tournament. Every team at some point is going to get tested and face adversity. I think that was it. I think they will win this game comfortably on Tuesday. I'm thinking 8 to 12 points, and Central Connecticut will win their fourth NEC title. They won three with the great Howie Dickinman in the early 2000s, last coming in 2007. I think they're going, and Patrick Sellers will be a name, a hot name, if he chooses. All right. We know he spent a lot of time in the state of Connecticut, but if he chooses, he could be going places this year, next year, if he wants to, if they win. So keep an eye on that. I think Central Connecticut will be the first team to officially make the NCAA tournament from the tri-state. That is the NEC. Let's move to the Big East and talk St. John's and UConn. The Big East tournament's getting underway. And, I want to say this. I applaud, absolutely applaud Rick Pitino and St. John's. They had nothing to play for, per se, against Marquette. Marquette needed this game. Marquette still had a chance to finish third in the Big East if they had won this game. They were at home. It was senior day, and St. John's could have easily rested. They could have easily laid down. That is not the St. John's DNA. That is not in their motive. Okay? They took a page out of the Herm Edwards book. You play to win the game. Doesn't matter if it's preseason against Rutgers. Doesn't matter if it's the last regular season game that did nothing for them in terms of their Big East seeding. Okay? This team played to win down to the final seconds, and they did just that. Now, I get it. I think there's still an outside shot that they can get as high as a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. So there's always something to play for. I think they're a good bet to get a 3 seed, no matter what happens in the Big East tournament. They're not cracking the top four, okay? They're not getting a top seed. But if they win the Big East tournament, regular season and tournament champions, they could crack the top eight and be a 2 seed, I believe. If they win the Big East tournament, they're either going to be the best 3 seed or the lowest 2 seed. They're right there on the cusp. But the win over Marquette was so impressive. Cam Jones, who is going to be likely a first round NBA draft pick, I think he's going to be a solid pro. He could not be stopped. All right. I think he ended up with 32 points in this game, and he was unstoppable. But RJ Lewis was right behind him. And RJ Lewis did what he's been doing all year long. He did whatever it took to help his team win. And the captain, Zubi Ejiofor, said the same thing afterward. That has been St. John's mantra. We do whatever it takes to win. Diving on the floor for loose balls, crashing the boards for offensive rebounds, getting steals, getting tip-ins, whatever it takes. Win ugly, win pretty, just win, baby. That is St. John's. And they made winning plays in this game, and Marquette did not. Marquette missed a ton of free throws. They're going to look back in this game and think they lost it at the free throw line. But there was a sequence, really, to me, that summed up two sequences. Number one, they both happened in overtime. Late in overtime, Marquette was catching up. St. John's had built like a 5-point lead, and Marquette hits a three. Chase Ross hits a three with under 2 minutes to go to put Marquette up one. Place is going bananas. St. John's needed an answer. And about 20 seconds later, RJ Lewis found himself open in the corner. He never hesitated. And you know what? As soon as he released it, I was like, it's in. Ice water in his freaking veins. He also had the game-tying layup after, a dime by Kadari Richmond that sent the game into overtime with 10 seconds to go. So Lewis hits the layup that sends it into overtime. Then he puts the three that puts him up in overtime. Now, it wasn't the game-winning bucket, but later, Marquette had the ball with a chance, or St. John's had the ball, tie game in overtime with a chance to win it. Lewis missed the three pretty badly. You know, he took the shot, missed it. And I think it was Ross who grabbed the rebound for Marquette. And no sooner did he grab the ball, Kadari Richmond comes from behind, tips the ball away. It goes right to Sim Wilcher, who immediately saw Zubi Ejiofor open in the lane. It was like bing, bang, boom. Zubi puts up a quick little hook in the lane, you know, a little runner, just like exactly the same spot that he hit it against Providence, and he got the rebound. And Zubi hits the game winner for the second time this year, and St. John's runs off the court, ruins Marquette's senior night, and ties UConn for the most Big East regular season wins at 18. How do you like them apples? This team just finds a way to win. And I don't know what's going to happen in the Big East tournament. All right. They have a road ahead of them. Congratulations on the best regular season since, I think, 85. Okay. It's been 40 years. They keep rewriting the record books. And the road ahead of them, I think they're the best team. They clearly are the best team. Can they win it? Look, Providence played them tough twice. They could face Providence in the quarterfinals at noon on Thursday, and they get by them. They could likely face Creighton, who I think is the one team that can really challenge them and does not fear them at Madison Square Garden. So the road's not going to be easy. I'm not worried about Marquette. I think they would beat Marquette. I think they'll beat Xavier. I think they would beat UConn should they face in the championship. I think if they get to the finals, St. John's will win it. If they get knocked off, I think slight chance if it's Providence, better chance if it's Creighton. I think if they get by those teams and get to the finals, St. John's will win the Big East tournament title. That's my prediction. What about those UConn Huskies? All right. UConn, I'm not saying they're peaking, but they have won four games in a row. And that hasn't happened since December. So you say, oh, they only won four games in a row. But look, this team is starting to get healthy. Hassan Diarra is healthy. Alex Caravan seems to have his form back, his confidence. Samson Johnson came up big on senior night with 12 points, his family. How about that story? Samson Johnson's family flies in from his native country and watches him play for the first time in their lives. See, they saw him play college basketball in person. I mean, if that doesn't send tears, man, I heard that story and I was like, wow. And first time they saw him in person. So they were there for his senior night and he scored 12 points against a Seton Hall team that clearly was not one bit motivated to play that game. Their coach was fired up. Boy was Shaheen Holloway fired up. But, you know, Knute Rockne couldn't have inspired that Seton Hall team. That's how flat and disinterested Seton Hall was. But UConn was motivated, and this was their, I joked on Twitter, this was Super Bowl II. And what I'm referring to is when UConn got absolutely shocked. It was the upset of the year when Seton Hall beat them at the Prudential Center. There was one huddle where Dan Hurley was shouting at his team, "This is our Super Bowl! This is our Super Bowl!" And I thought it was a little over the top, but hey, that's Dan Hurley. You know, he's always over the top, right? He was trying to motivate his team. So clearly, they failed at Super Bowl I. And to me, this was the bet of the day. The bet of the day. I think the spread was 17. They were not losing this game. They were going to win this game. And they tried to, really. They tried to win the game by 30 or 40 until, you know, Danny emptied the bench with plenty of time left on the clock. I think, you know, there must have been 4 minutes left and everybody was walking off to a standing ovation. he's not gonna rub it in. Danny's never gonna rub it in. He's certainly not gonna rub it in to Shaheen and his alma mater. Class move by Danny, but look, they were not losing this game. UConn, it was a buzzsaw, and Seton Hall stood no shot. So this team, they are the defending champs. Let's not forget it. I'm not saying they're winning a third straight national championship. I'm not saying they're even going to the Final Four. I don't think the odds are stacked against them. All right. I don't think that they're doing either. Gun to my head, I think at best, UConn can win one or two games in the NCAA tournament. They could lose in the first round, maybe get to the Sweet 16. All right. If I'm a one seed or a two seed, I don't want to play UConn. But can they win three straight in the Big East tournament? Yeah. But I think more likely than not, I think they can get to the finals. I think they can, I think, UConn Creighton, if they play in the semifinals on Friday night, will be one whale of a game. One whale of a game. Because, like I said, Caravan's rounding into form. Second team All Big East. Yes, he deserved it. Look at his entire body of work. Okay? That's why he deserved it. Look at his entire body of work. The most consistent player all season long. I think if Liam McNeely did not miss a few games, maybe McNeely would have been on second team instead of third team. And Solo Ball was there as well. Terrace Reed, sixth man of the year. This team is rounding into shape. You don't want to play them. And I forgot, by the way, we're mentioning these awards here, and let's give kudos to St. John's because what they did again, making history. RJ Lewis, Zubi Ejiofor, unanimous first team All Big East selections. First time two Johnnies have made the first team All Big East since the great Walter Berry and Mark Jackson in 1986. Zubi wins most improved player. They deserve to get these awards. And for my money, I know Ryan Kalkbrenner just won Defensive Player of the Year, and he became only the second Big East player ever, the only other player to do it four times, Hall of Famer Patrick Ewing. However, asterisk, Kalkbrenner did it in 5 years. Let's not forget that. Yes, he made history, but he did it in 5 years. Non-COVID situation this year is not happening for Ryan Kalkbrenner, but he still did it. Congratulations. It still counts. In my book, there's an asterisk. My prediction, and I'm recording this before the major awards are announced, Rick Pitino is a shoe-in for Coach of the Year. And you know how I feel. RJ Lewis, in spite of Kalkbrenner's dominance on the defensive end, RJ Lewis will win Big East Player of the Year because when you're doing what he's doing as a wing and you're making history for St. John's and they're doing things they haven't done in 40 years. When you're the best player on the best team and you're elevating your game to levels that you haven't been at before, you deserve Big East Player of the Year. All right. Couple of more things that we want to get to on this week's show. Let's talk Ivy League because good for Princeton. Princeton came into the last game of the regular season and they needed to beat Penn. I mean, they have beaten Penn, I believe it's now 14 straight times. These are the two teams that have dominated the Ivy League for decades. For decades. It was Penn and Princeton and everybody else. Obviously, over the last 15, 16 years, it's changed. We've seen Harvard up there, we've seen Cornell, and recently we have seen Yale dominate. But good for Princeton. They beat Penn again in a game they had to win to get into the Ivy League madness. They're the four seed. They are the last team to qualify. Their reward will be Yale. It will be a short-lived tournament for Princeton. Yale is winning this thing, okay? And the Ivy League has to do something about this tournament. They are rotating it every year to a different school. right? Princeton hosted 2 years ago. They hosted the men's and the women's. Only four teams qualify, right? So you have your semifinals and your finals over the weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Men and women alternate. 2 years ago, it was at Penn. I mean, 2 years ago, it was at Princeton. Last year, it was at Columbia. This year, it's at Brown. And Brown isn't even there. Brown's not even there. So they're not even a factor. It's Yale versus Princeton, and it's Dartmouth versus Cornell. So, prediction, I've said it all along, Yale will win it. This is Yale's year. Nobody's beating them. They're the best team. They'll probably get a 12 seed in the NCAA tournament. Pick them to win at least a game. They are that good. But Princeton got in. Let's get back to Princeton here. Princeton got in on the heels of a brilliant, brilliant performance by Xavien Lee, likely his last game ever at Jadwin Gym. Triple double, his second triple double of the season. 23 points, 12 assists, which is a career high for Xavien Lee, and 10 rebounds. That is incredible. His second triple double of the season, 23 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds. Blake Peters was brilliant in his final game at Jadwin with 25 points, including seven threes. He could not miss. But good for Mitch Henderson's boys. It really would have been, an egg on their face had the defending regular season champions and the team who was predicted first not get back there. So good for them. Yale will go for a two-peat. They were the defending champs, tournament champions last year. And they will go for the two-peat. So we certainly have seen the last of Blake Peters. We may have seen the last of Xavien Lee in Princeton uniforms. We'll see where that goes. But good for Princeton getting in. And one other Ivy League note that I want to mention, Jim Engels has stepped down as head coach of Columbia. Listen, Jim is one of the best guys in the business. He's the nicest guy. He did a tremendous job turning NJIT, helping them in their transition from, I think it was Division III. I could be wrong. I think it was Division III to Division I, and turned that program when he took over. They had the longest losing streak in the country, had some winning seasons there, 20 win seasons, catapulted that into a job at Columbia, and just never really got on track at Columbia. They had some moments. They beat Temple this year. They beat Villanova at Villanova, but he couldn't do it in the Ivy League. Another last place finish, 1-13 this year. I think the record is 8-48, 8-48 over the last 4 years in the Ivy League. And they mutually parted ways there at Columbia. But Jim Engels is a heck of a coach. And we wish him the best. And I hope that somehow, some way, he lands on his feet because he is too good of a mind to just leave the coaching ranks at this point in his career. And last but not least, let's do a little Rutgers, okay? Because this team has faced adversity all year long. And it's clear they're one of the biggest disappointments in college basketball. Let's not try to sugarcoat this. When you have two surefire lottery picks, when you have two of the top three, that's where they're projected. Two of the top three projected picks in the NBA draft. It's Cooper Flagg, one. It's Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper, two and three on most projections. When you have that type of talent on your roster, it is unprecedented. It has never happened where a team in college basketball that has had that firepower, who have been drafted that high in the NBA draft, it has never happened that they have missed the NCAA tournament. Barring a miracle, barring Rutgers winning five straight games, they're going to miss the NCAA tournament, which we already know would be a disaster. And right now, Rutgers finishes the regular season, it's bad enough for the second straight year under 500. So they did beat Minnesota, okay? And I know Minnesota is not a good team. And Steve Peichel can talk all he wants about Minnesota being one of the oldest teams in the country. You know what? They're also one of the poorest shooting teams. They missed a ton of free throws in this game. They're not a good shooting team. They're not a good team. I don't care how old they are. They, like you, are 15 and 16, and you were at home. So they needed overtime to win this game, but Rutgers found a way to win. Barely. Okay. They did win. So at least they are entering the Big Ten tournament on a winning note. I don't know what you're going to get out of this team. They're playing a USC team that battled them last time. And now you're on a neutral court. You have Rutgers, the 11 seed. USC is the 14th seed. You're playing on a neutral court. And, you know, it was one of the highest scoring games in the country. You know, certainly in the Big Ten, I should say. 95-85. There was no defense to be played in this game. Desmond Claude, the former player from Xavier, had 30 points in that game. Wesley Yates, they were dynamite. They combined for 53 points. That was a game when Dylan Harper went off. The supporting cast was great. I don't know what you're going to get out of this Rutgers team. It's a neutral court. If they win, then they get Purdue, a team that just pasted them, embarrassed them out in West Lafayette. It's not a good matchup. It hasn't been a good matchup. So forget about the uphill climb that they have here. They, you know, at this point, maybe they win one game. Maybe. But then, you know, you're talking about what's their postseason situation? Are they going to this crown tournament? Word is, if they get the invite, they have to take it. It's not until the end of March. Will players even want to play in it at that point? Will you get Dylan Harper or Ace Bailey that even want to play in it? I doubt it. And you can't blame them. So Rutgers could be playing their last game this week of the season against USC or Purdue. That's what you're looking at. And then it's going to be a long off season for Steve Peichel. He is clearly going to be on the hot seat. That's two straight losing seasons. You are what your record says you are, no matter what, no matter what the injuries and excuses are. At the end of the day, losing records are losing records. And I don't know if Steve Peichel could survive three straight losing seasons on the banks. There's going to be a ton of players that he's going to have to replace. Can they keep Somerville? Can they keep Dylan Grant? Can they keep Bryce Dorch? I think it starts with those three. Can they keep Jordan Durkak? Likely he's going to stay. He's not going anywhere. But what can you do with the other three? And you're going to have to get some scoring guards in here. You're going to have to get, you know, again, a major lead guard. A lot to talk about. We'll get to Rutgers once the season ends. We'll get to Seton Hall once their season ends and talk more about them. But either way, barring a huge, unprecedented run in the Big Ten tournament, and Rutgers has never been to the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament, their season will likely be over in the next one or two games. We shall see. All right. That is it for this edition of the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Remember, keep sharing, keep downloading, keep listening. I appreciate all that you do to support me here on the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Keep spreading the word. My thanks to my sponsor, Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. Give him a call, 201-988-2577. It's championship week. Enjoy the tournaments. Enjoy the games, everyone. Until next time, my name is Brian DeNovellis. So long.